Chapter 48. Marin 11. A column of smoke twisted toward the dwelling, a black streak that faded to translucence, barely visible in the starlight. Marin stood, stepping away from their meager fire, a fire whose smoke had masked the wind's ominous scent, a scent familiar but unwelcome. Burning flesh.
"I can smell the burning stations," Marin said,
scanning the darkness for other columns of smoke.
"The battlefield is close."
Renarin didn't respond. Marin turned back, glancing through the embers of smoldering rockbud shells. Renarin crouched in the ruddy light, one hand clutching his onyx sphere, the other pinching a worn bit of charcoal between two talon-like fingers as he scribbled on the stone beside their campfire. The light barely illuminated his figure, leaving his face dark, faintly outlined in red.
"Renarin?"
Marin prodded. There was a long pause, then Renarin looked up, his movements slow, as if impeded by a great weight of stone. He blinked.
"Yes?"
Marin pointed toward the sky.
"I just noticed those smoke trails. They're probably from burning stations."
Renarin blinked, then slowly stood, eyes becoming more alert.
"It's like he has to pull himself away from somewhere else," Marin thought. "Like he has to rejoin this world before he can interact."
"They're close,"
Renarin said in a monotone voice, moving over to stand beside Marin. Marin nodded.
"We stopped too early. We could have made it tonight after all."
Renarin stood for a moment, looking up into the night sky, the last waves of dusk creeping away in the west.
"You want to go on?"
he finally asked.
"Yes," Marin said eagerly. "Probably better to go at night anyway. We'll need to sneak past the king's lines and get into Jessen Rush's camp."
"All right,"
Renarin said, though he turned his eyes toward the campfire as he spoke, staring down at the ground, toward his strange notations. Marin hurriedly gathered their supplies and repacked the saddlebags. Renarin watched the ground until Marin stamped out the embers, stealing the light.
"We should probably lead the horses in the darkness," Renarin said, accepting his beast's reins from Marin.
"All right,"
Marin said, leading the way to the south toward the lines of smoke. Fortunately, Renarin followed, trailing along behind like a wisp from their now-dead fire.
"You shouldn't be so worried about him," Marin told himself. "Everyone says that Renarin is strange, and you haven't really known him that long. Maybe this kind of distraction is actually normal for him."
Better to worry about more pertinent problems, like exactly how they were going to find Arador. Marin had mentioned sneaking past the king's lines and entering Jessen Rosh's camp, but he doubted it would be that simple. For one thing, there was a good chance that Jessen Rosh had chosen to remain besieged in his city rather than face Elokar in the open. If that were the case, Marin wasn't sure how they were going to get past the city walls. What would Marin and Renarin do if confronted by scouts or sentries? And, assuming they did find Arador, how were they going to persuade him to return? Arador hadn't been willing to listen to such arguments on the day he left Kolinar. What made Marin think this time would be different?
"He expected us to come," Marin thought. "He left instructions regarding us. He thought we might come and help him, come fight with him."
And he probably had a right to expect it of them. Leaving Kolinar had been an act of disobedience itself. What more would it hurt by joining Arador in his fight? Could Lord Dalinar really blame Marin if he were acting alongside the man's own sons? The hike took longer than it might have during the day, but it still only took them about an hour to reach Crossguard. Marin kept careful but untrained watch for any scouts or sentries, knowing with a sort of resigned gloom that he probably wouldn't see them before he himself was spotted. Strangely, however, he didn't see anything, nor was he stopped by oncoming soldiers. In fact, Marin rounded a hillside and practically stumbled into the camp itself. Marin quickly ducked back into the shadows, waving Renarin to follow. The sky was lit by fires and torches, but Marin had incorrectly judged the light's proximity.
"Leave the horses," Marin whispered, bending down to tie his reins to a rockbud polyp. Then he waved Renarin to follow as he scuttled up the hillside. The camp below was arranged in a familiar fashion. Those tents and neat blocks had been the patterns of Marin's life for a very long time. There were far more burning stations than he had expected, and the scent of smoke was strong in the air. The city of Crossguard was a dark block in the near distance, more like a large keep than a proper city. Renarin shuffled beside him.
"This is wrong, Marin," he whispered. "Too much fire."
"There was a lot of death this day," Marin said with a bitter taste in his mouth.
"No," Renarin said, "not just that. Those are the fires of death, but also of victory. This war is over. We are too late."
"That can't be," Marin said. "Look, lights burn atop the city wall, and the keep looks like it's occupied. There's too much—" Marin trailed off as Renarin pointed toward the city. At first, Marin couldn't make out the reason for the gesture, but slowly his eyes discerned shapes half hidden in the darkness. He could see through the wall in one entire section, could see the twinkling of lights beyond. An enormous chunk of the wall was simply missing.
"Awakeners," Renarin whispered.
Marin closed his mouth, Renarin's hushed word hanging like a dread curse. Never during the entire Prala War had the king used his awakeners in battle. Lord Dalinar would have forbidden it, but now that restriction was gone. Even still, to use awakeners against his own kinsmen.
"Arador," Marin said, standing, "we have to find him."
Renarin reached out, grabbing a hold of the edge of Marin's cloak.
"We're too late, Marin," he whispered.
Marin pulled the cloak free.
"Wait here," he said. "I'm just going to go look around a bit. I have to find out what happened to Arador. If the king has him in captivity, Lord Dalinar needs to know."
Marin continued down the side of the hill. A part of him realized that he wasn't thinking rationally, that he didn't want to consider the implication of Renarin's statement. But what was he supposed to do? Come all this way, then turn around and face Lord Dalinar's disappointment without even a word of news about his son and heir? As Marin strode forward in the night, he heard Renarin scramble up behind him.
"Put up your hood," Renarin said. "Our cloaks are Colin blue, and you have a shard blade. If we stay away from the main camp, maybe no one will notice that we bear my father's glyph."
Marin nodded, doing as suggested. He rested his shard blade on his shoulder, then continued forward in the night, walking directly toward the gap in the city wall. Men in Elokar's army might recognize him, but the townspeople of Crossguard wouldn't. Perhaps some of them could give news.
"If they're not all cowering in their storm cellars. In fact, King Elokar probably declared a curfew. That's what he did in all the Pralan cities we captured. What am I doing? This is foolish."
But he'd been foolish twice before. He'd jumped to attack a shardbearer while the rest of his squad scattered, grabbing a hold of an armored man and pulling him from his mount. He stood beside Arador to fight two experienced duelists with superior equipment. Both times bravery had served him well. The few soldiers they passed bowed and moved quickly away, seeing the blade but not the shadowed faces. Marin approached the crossguard walls, each step seeming to take him into a deeper state of numbness. Chunks of rock lay scattered across the ground around the gap in the wall. The awakeners had only needed to destroy the foundations, and the section of stone had collapsed. The broken hole in the wall approached with the looming despair of a city shattered, defeated, conquered. Two lines of torches stood just inside the gap, running corridor-like into the city. As Marin drew closer, he realized that there was something standing in between each pair of torches, something vaguely illuminated by their light, something thin.
"Marin, let's turn back,"
Renarin encouraged. His voice seemed distant, removed. Marin stepped up to the gap in the wall. It was at least 100 feet across. The torches were closer now, and he walked toward the line closest to him. It was odd to find no sentries by the city wall. Perhaps Elokar didn't see anything else to fear from Crossguard. There was some movement inside the city, mostly what looked like guard patrols in the streets. Marin had been right. There would be no interviewing city occupants this night. However, Marin's interest no longer lay in the townspeople. He walked up to the lines of torches toward the objects they guarded.
Marin,
Renarin said. Marin ignored him, striding right up to the first pair of torches, where he found Arador waiting for him. The heir's decapitated head was strangely recognizable. For some reason, that didn't seem right. This gruesome thing stuck to a spear shouldn't have been so familiar, shouldn't have reminded Marin of laughter and camaraderie. He should have seen only death in it, not a strong reminder of the man who had befriended and guided him. Marin turned back toward Renarin. The boy stood with sorrow, his torchlit features hauntingly similar to the ones atop the spear.
"He's dead, Marin," Renarin whispered. "We couldn't have changed that. We were too far away, and we left too late."
Marin turned back to Arador.
"This isn't the way it was supposed to be, Arador," he said. "I came to get you, to take you back." "Marin,"
Renarin said with a quiet urgency,
"those guards have noticed us. We should go."
Marin stared into Arador's dark, dead eyes.
"Why? Why wasn't I in time? Where is the Almighty now? He helped me save the king's life twice only so that very man could kill Arador? Where is the justice in that?"
"Marin,"
Renarin said with further urgency. Marin allowed the boy to pull him away from the line of torches and its grisly faces. As the faces fell into darkness, however, the questions they asked didn't leave Marin alone. It was fortuitous that they managed to reach their horses without incident, but Marin barely noticed. His body did its duty, carrying him forward as they untied their horses and escaped out into the night, heading west toward Kolinar, for lack of anything else to do. They rode silently.
"Arador can't be dead. That thing atop the spirit wasn't him."
Marin didn't want to think. He just wanted to walk in the darkness. What was the use of Bajardin and Shenaris, the arguments and nobility, if they didn't protect the men who followed them? Neither man spoke complaint as they trudged eastward, riding impassively for hours. Marin wanted to be far away from that place, for he knew when he finally did lay down to sleep, he would see dead eyes watching him, accusatory in his sleep. He was actually surprised when a shadow appeared before him, and he realized a faint light was shining on the horizon behind him. Had they really walked that long? A voice suddenly snapped in the air. The figures were upon them like a sudden storm, pulling Marin to the ground and ripping his shard blade from his fingers. He cried out as something heavy pressed against his back, holding him down. The voice sounded again, speaking in a language Marin didn't understand. Rough hands grabbed Marin, hauling him to his feet. Dazed, he saw Renarin undergoing similar treatment a short distance away. A group of soldiers in Alith blue surrounded them, watching with wary eyes. The king's soldiers. Marin shook his head, trying to dispel his stupor. Had they really been tracked all this time? Followed by...
"Where is the Lady Colin?"
the voice demanded, speaking Alith with a strange accent. The speaker was the only one who didn't wear blue, but was instead dressed in simple brown clothing of little note. His face, however, was odd. His eyes were wide, a little too big, like those of a child, and his skin had a bleached paleness to it.
"Where is the Lady Colin?"
the man repeated. His voice was calm, but there was a danger to it. An implication that his was a question best answered as quickly and as truthfully as possible.
"Lady Yasna?" Marin said with true confusion. "What are you talking about?"
The strange man frowned slightly. He stepped forward, moving with an almost inhuman litheness, slinking like a passing breeze and not a creature of flesh. He studied Marin for a moment, then turned to Renarin.
"I recognize you,"
the strange man said in his lightly accented voice. "The son of Dalinar Colin." Renarin hung limply in his captor's arms. The stranger watched them both for a moment.
"These are not the ones we are looking for," he finally said. but the king may desire to speak with them. Regardless, they cannot be released now. Bind them and search them for weapons."
Their captors moved to comply, quickly binding Marin's arms. He didn't struggle until he saw one of the men holding his shard blade. The man raised a rock toward the pommel.
"No!"
Marin yelled, suddenly frantic. His 100 days were nearly up. He almost had the blade bound. If he lost it now... One of the soldiers cuffed Marin neatly on the side of the head, dazing him. The other man let the rock fall, knocking the nearly blackened opal free from its bindings. Marin watched with despair as the gemstone fell to the stones, discarded as useless. Marin watched with stupefaction, his head throbbing from the blow. It took a sudden motion from the side to make him focus again. Renarin was free. The boy jumped away from the soldiers, clutching something protectively in his fingers, his onyx sphere. He turned to dash away, but one of the soldiers tackled him, throwing him to the ground. The sphere flew free from protective fingers, smashing to the ground a short distance from Marin. The sphere shattered as stone met stone, scattering dark chips into the air. Renarin cried out in despair, scrambling forward, then falling to the ground as one of the soldiers grabbed his foot. Marin yanked against his surprised captor's grip, free for a sudden and marvelous moment. Then he was there, the Shin Man, moving like flowing water. He grabbed Marin by the neck and threw him down with a smooth spin of the body. Arms still tied, Marin hit the ground hard, and blackness took him.